This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Hello and good morning. Welcome to the Morning Run on BFM 89.9, The Business Station, the only station you should be listening to as you start your day, because we will catch you up with everything you need to know as you start your day today. I'm Melissa Idris. I've got Kusu Chuang and Joyce Go here with me. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
How are you feeling today, Chuang? Because you had a bit of a late night last night.
I did. I was driving German cars around a track, going around in circles. It was a lot of fun.
Okay, I should probably explain. BFM teamed up with Mercedes to host an event called The Psychology of Performance. And I understand, Chuang, that you were the moderator for the panel where I think, you spoke to different people who have experienced great and essentially embodies the idea of what the psychology of performance means.
Yeah, so Mercedes launched three cars last night, the G63, which is the top-end version of the Geländewagen.
English?
Yeah, a four-wheel drive that goes everywhere.
Okay.
They also launched the GLC63, which is the top performer, performance-wise of the GLC range, and the GLC Coupe. In other words, they're very, very, very nice cars. They go very, very, very fast, and they're very luxuriously appointed. And they can only be paid for by very rich people.
So were you a bit of a speed demon around the track?
My goodness, my golly gracious me. I drove this E63 around the track. I think I spun off like four times.
Oh, I'm glad that you're safe and sound.
Did you buy any?
I bought four.
About four.
Different colours of the rainbow.
You know, I should put like risk management and not have you do these types of events, because you never know the next morning, you want to be on the show.
It's very well managed already. There's a rev limiter, there's a speed limiter, there's all remote controlled.
Yeah. I see. Wonderful. Well, we're going to fill this hour with a whole host of interesting news and views, including a look at the days of lifers. That means sticking to an organization for decades. That seems to be over now.
Yeah. On the flip side, millennials get a lot of flack for moving jobs every few years. But one management author says she knows the secret to how long you should stay at one job.
All right, there you go. All right, and we also have, what else do we have coming up, Chuang?
I'm going to be talking about a man who has never held a job in the corporate world, is facing multiple charges in court. He's been accused of all kinds of things, including stealing and embezzlement. And he's none other than our former prime minister, who's also the former finance minister.
That's right.
And he no longer has a platform to voice his views. So he uses social media. Mm. But we'll be talking about the substantive element of his responses.
That's right. Okay. We'll be, I guess, looking at what his role should be in Malaysia Baru. And in about 40 minutes or so, I'll be talking about this scenario. So imagine if you had your boss set you down and told you that you were being transferred out of your current role to another department. What would your reaction be? And how would, do you think these transfers are good? Because I guess in this day and age, in this past few days, we've been talking about perhaps the possibility of a cabinet reshuffle. So there you go. We'll be discussing that coming up all in the next hour. So make sure you stay with the Morning Run. Here's Stevie Wonder for you. Signed, sealed and delivered. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. It's coming up to 10 minutes past 6 o'clock on Thursday, the 15th of November. Melissa Chuang and Joyce here with you this morning. And that was the Beatles with You Really Got a Hold on Me. And this morning we're talking about how long you should hold on to a job.
Yeah, so, there's this thinking that job hopping too much is bad for you. That's bad for your CV. But according to Susie Welsh, she's one of the management author, and also she's a financial journalist as well. She's saying that staying too long in a job could be equally harmful to your career as well, because according to her, she's saying that, in her opinion, a reasonable timeline for you to be in a job is about 3 to 5 years. The longer you stay in one company, some hiring managers will start to ask, can this candidate fit in this new culture? Can this candidate, be running at a different pace? Can they do a different way of doing things? These kind of questions will come up. So it's a kind of different take to it. Because I guess for us, sometimes you say, oh, job hopping, especially with the young ones, when it comes to CV, every 2 years they job hop. But in her opinion, that might not be bad as well.
I've been in both an employer and an employee, and I've seen CVs come my way. I've seen this guy, people, both girls and boys. There was one time I came across a CV, this guy probably in his early 30s, had already had 13, 14, 15 jobs.
Wow.
Like 6 months here, 2 months there, 1 year here, 2 months there, 3 months here. And he must have thought it was a really good idea, right? Because he would have said, oh, I've got lots of experience. But at the moment I saw that CV, I said, this guy is nowhere near coming to my company, man.
Okay, well, I mean, that's an extreme case, isn't it? I mean, you're talking about a few months. What can you feasibly learn and do well within a few months in a company? But on the, so I think perhaps here the idea of maybe every 2 years job hopping, is that acceptable versus, say, staying somewhere beyond, as Susie Welsh puts it, beyond 5 years? Is staying somewhere beyond 5 years necessarily a bad thing? And I say this having stayed at BFM for 8 years now.
Well, over the weekend, I met a guy called Lim Soon Huat. He's the managing director of PPB Group. You know, PPB obviously has 18.5% of Wilmar, market cap 25 billion ringgit. He has been with PPB his entire career.
He's a lifer.
He's been there 35. He joined as a management executive or whatever. He's now the MD. So I guess if you move up the ladder and you reach the apogee, well, there's nothing wrong with that, right? Yeah. I mean, look at Steve Hager. He's been at Credit Suisse his entire life.
Forever.
I think he's been in Malaysia Credit Suisse since the early 90s when I came to look for a job.
Mm.
And he's still there, but he's now, you know, I think Asia CEO or something.
So what would make that difference?
I think, I guess if a person is growing, I think in from
within
the
organization,
organization, if the person is learning new skills, if the person is growing,
being promoted,
an opportunity to learn new things and grow, to me, I think that's okay. Because I think for me, in this article, Susie also says that in her opinion, right, what hiring managers want to know is if they can teach an old dog new tricks.
Mm.
So when they see a CV and they go, oh, this person's been in this job for a very long time. Can this person learn a new trick? I think it boils down to job attitude as well. I don't know, on the individual.
Equally, I met people in there who have joined in the organizations for the 10, 20 years. And I said to them, hey, how come you're so free one? And then he said, you know, I've been here so long, I've figured out all the loopholes and I can basically make it happen.
Well, you get good at your job.
You get good at your job, efficient. But you
also
find the loopholes in terms of...
Auto-cruise,
yes, absolutely.
That's a really good point, because I think anytime you have reached that auto-cruise level, that should be a red flag for someone, right? Because you know you've got...
If you're so inclined though.
Oh.
But if you're not inclined that way and you're looking for that cruise control...
Okay,
right?
Didn't you be bothered?
I would say a lot of civil servants are like that.
Oh.
Okay, is this a young person's problem? I mean, this kind of job hopping thing, is that only a young person's game, as opposed to when you hit a certain age, you want to find a little bit of longevity in your career, right? You want to be able to put roots down somewhere, so to speak, in a job, in a company.
Well, if you resign from a job at 45, you may not get another job. That's the problem.
Why is that?
By and large, corporations are quite ageist. If you hire a 45-year-old, chances are that person won't be able to be to learn new skills. He or she will have come with a lot of cultural baggage. And most of the time, they're quite expensive as well. So once you get to a certain age, you don't want to be resigning because you don't get there's no guarantee of another job.
But
unless you're CEO... That or you see your material, then it's a different thing.
Yeah, what if the company is hiring the 45-year-old for the 45, the 20-plus years of skills
that the person has?
For a
C-suite role. Yeah, I get it.
So perhaps that's okay, right? So in a way, I feel that whether that's a good time to jump or not is really subjective, because what she's saying is that this 3 to 5 year timeline is fixed. But I think it's really subjective. It depends on what your current role is in the organization, whether you see a long runway, whether you see yourself progressing. I think that's good. I personally don't think that you should give yourself that 5 year mark, but some people might think, hey, after 2 years, it's time to switch. Because there's also this thinking, I think it's an article in Forbes that says that after every 2 years, your pay is kind of stagnant. If you don't jump...
You know, my advice is just don't read any of those articles. You just do what you... No, because that... I mean, look,
You do you.
I mean, this woman sits like halfway around the world. She's trying to tell us what to do. She's got no idea. She's got no idea.
Well, you know what? Let's ask people who are here. Tell us what you think. How long should someone stay in a job, especially here in the Malaysian context? Tell us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. I also want to know what's the longest you've stayed in a job and what's the shortest period of time you've stayed in one role. We would love to hear from you. We'll come back and take a look at more after this on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9 is 6:21 right now. You're listening to The Morning Run. Joyce Chuang and me, Mel, here keeping you company as you start your day with a groovy tune there by Charles Bradley, No Time for Dreaming. Now, one person that we hope gets his head out of the clouds is the former Prime Minister, Dato' Sri Najib Razak. And the reason we say that with love is that he's been making... I say that nicely because there are some comments that he's been making that have us questioning what he was thinking when he said them.
Yeah, so I've been actually watching quite bemusedly from the sidelines in terms of Najib's comments on Facebook, and he's been popping up quite frequently, chiming in on a lot of issues that the government, the current government, has been doing, whether it's on the budget or whether it's on the Petronas downgrade, whether it's in terms of Muslim Malik's movements in his job as a cabinet minister. And it just makes me wonder because, you know, I come from an era where retired politicians, they retire. You know, they retire with gravitas and with grace. And
really?
they pretty much stay by the side now. I mean, Lim Chong Yew, the chief minister of Penang, is a good example. Abdullah Badawi, for all his foibles, was also a graceful retiree. And, I mean, look at the British Prime Ministers, John Major, Margaret Thatcher, by and large, stayed very silent. Even George Bush Sr. stayed very silent. And then you've got Najib, who is not only quite vocal, but also quite acerbic in his remarks.
Well,
it's really weird.
Sorry, I just have to poke a hole in that argument, the Chuang, because our current Prime Minister was not a graceful retiree.
No, correct. This one, Mahathir was not a graceful retiree.
Sure.
I didn't mention Mahathir as a graceful retiree. He was an exception, but he's been an exception his entire life. And, you know, Najib, if he had a lot of political goodwill when he retired, then I would have taken his remarks on with a lot more, credibly, right? Well, I mean, he's facing multiple charges of corruption, and we know from his tenure and his 9 years as Prime Minister what he allegedly did with his wife and his bunch of friends. And, It just seems in really bad taste. Do you know what I mean? For him to come out and say these things when, you know, at the time when he was finance minister, he was very, very financially, and I say this with very loosely as well, right? He was quite flagrant with the country's finances. And then to come out on social media to be so acerbic in his remarks, it just reeks a little bit.
I find it quite funny that he's so out there right now. Like, he has so many comments to make on, be it on Facebook, on social media. Remember when he was Prime Minister, I don't remember a time
at
when
all.
There was a press conference or anything, right? Like a live press conference with him or whether or not he made that many comments or was that accessible through social media. It's quite a different Najib Razak, I must say.
Okay, so for me, the question that we are asking this morning is, what is Najib Razak's role in Malaysia Baru, right? So, you know, it's equal opportunity comments. If you want Malaysia Baru, which is openness and freedom of expression, then we should be able to accept comments coming from him as well.
Mm-hmm.
No,
yes.
You're right. You're right. And I think you're absolutely right. But it's also us on the receiving end of those comments to take them on board. I mean, if there's an internet troll who makes ridiculous statements on social media, then that person, to me, doesn't deserve to get the benefit of my eyeballs or my eardrums. Do you know what I mean?
Do you think he still has some influence on social media? I mean, I see some of his comments becoming news articles, right? So his social
purely by virtue of the fact that he is a former prime minister.
Mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but what's his role now in government? He's a member of parliament for Pekan, that's right? But he has no other role other than that, even within his own party, I think, right? He's other than card-carrying member. What else?
Yeah, and I guess for me, maybe he feels like he has to make a point. Like everything that's coming out, you know, with budget and all that, I feel that for him, he's like, oh, I need to get my point across. And given that now with social media, you have that platform, why not?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, yeah, I get it. I get it, right? But the problem is with me is because what he says on social media gets reprinted and gets published.
Sure, and I also have to take issue with Lim Guan Eng for responding to some of the comments. Look, I understand Najib Razak has insight, given that he was the former finance minister, right? So perhaps he may not agree with the current finance minister and the way that, you know, Guan Eng is doing things. But the back and forth, very public spat feels very pedestrian to me. And I feel like as statesmen, they should not, I guess, sink to that level.
I asked Guan Eng this last week.
Okay.
Was it last week or was it Monday?
Yeah? On Monday.
I'm not sure. I can't remember exactly what he said, but it wasn't the most substantive of all. And I think it's because he spent so many years as an opposition politician, backbiting from the benches, that it's very hard to change your ilk. Do you know what I mean? Right. Mm. But now that he's a sitting finance minister, I personally would like my finance ministers to have a bit more gravitas.
You know what I want? I would like Najib Razak to team up with Khairi Jamaluddin, who is currently the shadow finance minister, and perhaps come up with a concrete opposition or alternative platform to the current. Because what I want to see as a Malaysia Baru citizen is to see a strong opposition, not this kind of bickering on social media.
Yeah, and some of the ways, I mean, some of the sniping, some of the remarks are so childish, you know, and you're former prime minister, man, and you're the current finance minister.
Well, tell us what you think. We want to hear from you. What is Najib Razak's role in Malaysia Baru? 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We've got Al Green to take you to the 6:30 News Bulletin with Let's Stay Together on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, 6:40 right now. Electric Light Orchestra there with Rock and Roll is King. Thanks for staying with us. This is The Morning Run. Melissa, Joyce and Chuang here with you this morning and taking in your messages from our conversation a little bit earlier about what should be the role of Najib Razak in Malaysia Baru. We have a comment here from on WhatsApp, no name given, but saying that, why are you giving Najib Razak the highlight this morning? And we also have messages from Karen Wong and another unnamed person who brought up a good point to say that Najib's role in Malaysia Baru should be clearing his name before speaking and helping find Joe Lowe. I like Karen's message, which reads, Najib's role is redemption, working with the current government to apprehend Joe Lowe and recover Malaysia's lost wealth.
No, that would be mutually beneficial to both sides, as opposed to sniping from the sidelines. I like that comment. You're right.
Mm, I think so, too. We have Izhar Yusuf on Twitter to say, maybe as a cautionary tale. There you go. Well, keep those messages coming in. Our Twitter handle is at BFM Radio, and you can text us at 018-789-8899 on WhatsApp. Now, we're also hearing some news that there's talk in the corridors of Putrajaya that there could be a cabinet reshuffle, that Tun Dr. Mahathir is disappointed with the performance of several ministers in their portfolios, in their ministries, and also some of the controversies that they've courted. So the question we're asking is, could there be a cabinet reshuffle? And if there is that necessarily a good thing? Because I'm thinking about trickling it down to the everyday person's experience, right? If it happened to me, I've been in a job for, say, 6 months or so, and my boss thinks I'm not performing and rotates me out of that role to another department. And I'm thinking to myself, well, 6 months is really not all that much time for me to be able to do my job well or to kind of prove my performance in any shape or form, especially if I've never done it before.
Well, there are parallels in Premiership football, right? If you lose
there's always parallels.
Look, I mean, the Real Madrid coach, I can't remember his name, but he lost like 4 games on the trot and he's out of a job, 5 games on the trot, right?
How long is that in
Maybe
terms
about
of
three
months?
Weeks, two, what? 3 weeks, yeah.
And he's out of a job after 3 weeks?
He's out of a job. So the expectations are so high. I know there's no direct parallels to politics, right? But the problem with coalition politics is that you have got to appease each coalition partner within your group, and you've got to, in a way, award them roles, senior roles, i.e. read cabinet ministerships.
Mm-hmm. For winning seats for
the group. And I get that. I understand that. But there's a chasm between a reward for political reward and the other is technical abilities. If you're not fit for purpose and you've been named to the post because you are a popular and likable person and a senior position within your party, and you get the ministership, then I don't think that's fair to the people.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah, or if you got the position because you tick certain boxes that need to be ticked, but your skills and ability.
Like what kind of boxes?
Maybe, for
things
example,
that cannot be said.
Like some boxes like representation, you know, it falls down again to whether or not there should be a quota, be it for gender or be it for race, be
That's
it
right.
for which state you're
That's
from.
Right.
Should it be based on that or should it be based on your capabilities?
I'm wondering, I guess, because you're right that it's not a direct comparison between, say, corporate and politics or football and politics. But 6 months really isn't that much of time. And I'm wondering whether, you know, whether corporate cabinet reshuffles are a good idea because, look, the way you get good at your job is if you do it and you do it well, right? The 10,000 hours or so you put into a job. So why do we like the idea of of cabinet reshuffles? Wouldn't we want, you know, to build technocrats in certain ministries, certain portfolios, leave them there for long enough so that they know what they're doing? You know, we see cabinet reshuffles not just in... this is a common practice around the world, right? You have cabinet reshuffles. The idea is that you build well-rounded politicians so they know how every aspect of government works. But is that really a good thing?
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, change management can be drastic or it can be measured, right? And cabinet ministers do not have to be reshuffled on the basis of several mad missteps in the last few weeks. They can be managed. And I think it's incumbent upon this novice coalition to say, look, let's regroup, guys. Let's get together in a big room, spend 3 days in a retreat, for example.
So you want to see a cabinet reshuffle?
No, I don't want to see a cabinet reshuffle because it sends all the wrong messages about this novice government, right? I think the coalition should just get together in one small room in a retreat for 3 days, lock themselves in and say, look, let's regroup and let's work together as one. Mm-hmm. You know, Mr. A or Miss A, you've done this and I think this is it. And I think Mahathir should lead it. Mahathir and his senior guys, right? Asmin, Guaneng, and even self-analyze. It's very important to do that because I don't think they're talking to each other.
I think restock and relook. Take stock and look at where are we today? What do we want to achieve?
Yeah.
And where are we in that?
Correct.
And what can we do moving forward? I think that's important. That's true, Chuang. But the thing is, at the end of the day, sometimes, like you say, whether or not they're talking to each other, that's one. Also, is there time to get... How are you going to get everybody to
for this company trip?
Yeah, look, I mean...
for this away day.
Look, I met Guaneng, right? We interviewed Guaneng on Monday and he was... He looked so tired. Mm. He was exhausted, right? Offline, I said, look, YB, this job must be full on, right? Because he says more than full on.
Well, he did close his eyes in Day
yeah,
One Right Yet.
He's knackered, man. Even Ken Ming, right? Ken Ming was knackered as well. He was on the go. He's got three or four positions. He's got stuff in the trade ministry. He's got his job as Bangi. He said Bangi is going to take the back seat right now.
I want to come back to comment something you said, Chuang. You said that if a cabinet reshuffle at this point in time can send the wrong message, what kind of message?
Well, the fact that you've made missteps, and I think Najib on his first Facebook post has got a point, you know.
You're giving the man credit.
Credit where credit's due.
Yes.
You made some bad decisions in terms of your management appointees, and for you to U-turn on that sends wrong messages to your stakeholders, which is the citizens and the people of Malaysia.
Well, Roe has WhatsApped in to say that he thinks the period of your tenure should be relative to the damage you can do in the time you're in office. And this applies especially to politicians. Look at the damage Theresa May has done and is doing. So he reckons, shuffle away, tune. All right, keep those messages coming in, 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Do you think there should be a cabinet reshuffle? And I want to know who you would want on your wish list for a cabinet reshuffle. I guess we're taking a look at the report card of the ministers now 6 months in Malaysia Baru. More after this, so stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Joyce Chuang and me, Mel Queen, there with Killer Queen. And we're taking a look at the rumours in the corridors of Putrajaya that there could be a Pakatan Harapan cabinet reshuffle. Thank you guys for your messages coming in hard and fast this morning. It's a bit of a mixed bag in terms of the split opinions, whether you think there should be a reshuffle, whether it's too soon or not. We have a KK who says that no cabinet reshuffle, but the underperforming ministers ministers and assistant ministers must buck up. So in his opinion, KK says on WhatsApp, the DAP appointees are doing very well. Amanah doing okay, but PKR and PPBM, that's Bersatu, poor except for a few like Azmin Muhyiddin and Zaid Sadiq. Interesting that he has split it down partisan lines, so party lines, right? Because I wonder whether some of these ministerial posts were given as rewards or to rewards for these parties, these coalition parties in GE14.
I think that's the reference I was trying to make earlier. I didn't want to name names. This comment from Darren Goh, I think is very interesting. He agrees with the reshuffle of the cabinet. He thinks that we are in the era of agile leadership now in corporate organizations. If we know we are going to fail, we fail fast, we regroup and then move again. Interesting comments. But the corporate world is a very different animal to the political world. You've got votes, you've got people's feelings and sentiments. It's not such, you know, the corporate world is very cold. Yeah. The political world is not really.
Well, keep those messages coming. And if you're going to text us on WhatsApp, please make sure you say your name so we can mention them on air. Now, I'm wondering a couple of things here. So if there is a cabinet reshuffle, could we see Anwar Ibrahim as part of the mix? And whether you would want to see Anwar Ibrahim as part of that cabinet lineup?
Well, he's got experience, right? He used to be the finance minister. So
speaking about experience, so on the federal level, only Dr. Mahathir and Muhyiddin Yassin, as well as Saifuddin Abdullah, the foreign minister right now, has federal government experience. On a state level, Guaning and Azmin Ali has governing experience. But the rest are all rookies. They're in this for the first time, learning the ropes just a few months in.
Yeah, and remember, last month, Tunam actually made a comment saying that some new ministers barely made the grade. He said that, you know, he scored some of them about 40% to 50% in his books. And you wonder whether or not is that...
Mahathir said this?
Yeah, he did.
Incredible.
Yeah, so, okay, look, I think there are some ministers who are rookies, first-timers to the job, but are doing a great job. You know, the MCMC... So Gobind Singh, the communications minister, I think is doing a wonderful job. I think transport ministry also proving that there has been, you know, traction in the last few months. But where I think, and personally, I think also the federal territories minister is, I was skeptical at first about him being appointed to this portfolio, but I think that he is the right man for the job. He has managed to bring a level of credibility and transparency to what has been previously a very scandalous portfolio. So yes, I think this is an interesting time because there are some ministers who are outperforming others. And I'm wondering, why is that? Is it because they're just not suited for the role, or is that because there's so much legacy and baggage that comes with that portfolio?
Well, I like the clean energy role. I think that's been done quite well by the minister, as well as the health minister's done quite a good job as well. But it's like a classroom, right? You're not, you're going to have like maybe, who are they?
Say 24 you've got the 20%, guys, right? The top 20%.
Yeah, you know, and
should you give more coaching to the bottom 40? Well, let's not call it bottom 40. The
non-performing
ones. Non-performing
ones. So this is the A-class, right? A-class always got...
A-team.
You know, the A-team, right? You know, and you'll have the top of the class, the top 10, right? And then we'll have the bottom quartile. It's not because they are basket cases necessarily, because they've gotten to where they are because of what they achieved.
Mm-hmm.
They just need to be coached and managed. I don't think a reshuffle is necessary.
So what if they're not suitable for that role or for that portfolio? So is it, the question here is, because if they realize that they're not suitable, is it timely to do that shift right now?
Tough one, right?
I think that we should, I agree with you, Chuang. I don't think there should be a cabinet reshuffle right now. But what I do think is we need to stop and take stock of where we're at and then identify why it is we think certain ministerial roles are not performing fast enough or well enough, and perhaps provide more support with that. So I'm seeing a lot of messages coming hard and fast. We'll come back after the 7 o'clock news to take a look at some of your comments and your wish list for a cabinet reshuffle. So stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.